Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour one.
Delighted to have you with me. The phone number, if you want to be on the program, 877-973-7425. The President of the United States is addressing, he's on Capitol Hill, he's talking about anti-Semitism. If I can pull up some of his speech here, he's given it live. It's been going on for the last little while. I'm just curious if he's both sidesing the situation. Not sure if he is or not.
We heard from again. But through Tom's efforts, Rolls Bustis here in the Capitol, he was also given honorary U.S. citizenship, only the second person ever after Winston Churchill. The Holocaust Museum here in Washington is located on a road in Rawls' name. The story of the power of a single person to put aside our differences, to see our common humanity, to stand up to hate, and its ancient story of resilience from immense pain, persecution, to find hope, purpose, and meaning in life, we try to live and share with one another. That story endures. Let me close with this. I know these days of remembrance fall on difficult times. We all do well to remember. These days also fall during the month we celebrate Jewish American heritage. A heritage that stretches from our earliest days to enrich every single part of American life.
That's the president speaking. He's wrapping up his speech. He says there's no place in the United States for anti-Semitism. He didn't aggressively both sides it in this speech, which is notable considering how much he has both sides. All lives mattered in these speeches. Now, this comes as we have word, if you recall yesterday, we had the breaking news that Hamas decided to accept the peace deal. So yesterday, word comes that Hamas agreed to a ceasefire as Israel seized a key checkpoint between Gaza and Egypt so that Hamas operatives could not flee. Now it turns out Hamas didn't actually accept the ceasefire. This is from NBC.
The proposal that has now been on the table for more than a week, a proposal that the U.S. has been urging Hamas.
We're going to stop there because the interference in his audio. So Gaza, Hamas accepts the ceasefire, except they changed some key words in the ceasefire, and members of the American media kind of, well, they glossed over that fact. Let me explain this to you. So here's the headline. Hamas's offer to hand over 33 hostages includes some who are dead. It is not clear, subtitle, whether Hamas revealed in the ceasefire negotiations with Israel how many of the 33 who would be freed in the first phase of the proposed deal are still alive and how many are dead. So what we're told is that Hamas accepted the ceasefire terms, and this is the way it was originally reported. They changed a few words. That's the phrase. They changed a few words. One of the words they changed was hostages to dead bodies. And one of the words they changed was temporary to permanent before the word ceasefire. So the American press and the international press rushed out to announce that Hamas had embraced the ceasefire. That's how we reported it yesterday. It was the breaking news. It was the headlines that Hamas accepted the ceasefire. What no one knew at the time was that Hamas changed keywords, hostages to dead bodies and temporary ceasefire to permanent ceasefire. That was not how it was announced, which has led to frustration by the Israelis with the Biden administration and how they have handled this. Here's the story. Israeli officials claim the Biden administration knew about the latest hostage and ceasefire deal proposal Egypt and Qatar negotiated with Hamas, but didn't brief Israel before Hamas announced it had accepted it. A senior U.S. official pushed back, saying American diplomats have been engaged with Israeli counterparts. There were no surprises. That's not what Israel is saying. What Israel says is that Hamas changed key relevant terms. Those key relevant terms being they wouldn't release live hostages, they would release dead bodies. We don't know how many of the hostages are alive, how many are of them are dead. We don't know if Hamas has already killed them all. You know, they released the video of Hirsch, the one Israeli hostage, and he was still alive. We assume it's recent in time. Did they kill him afterwards? We have no idea. We don't know how many are alive and how many are dead. We know the Rafah invasion has begun. And we know that Israel is intent on cutting off Hamas. So you have to understand one of the things that Hamas has done is they've built tunnels. And some of those tunnels possibly, we're not sure, but possibly go under the border with Egypt to access points where the Hamas agents could go underground and bring supplies in underground to be unseen. With Israel controlling now the border access between Gaza and Egypt, Israel can dig down into those tunnels at the border and stop stuff from flowing under. Hamas has been firing at Israel and also firing at residents of Gaza fleeing Egypt. That has somewhat been missed in this, that Hamas is killing residents of Gaza who are attempting to flee. All of this is happening while Joe Biden says stop, while Joe Biden says don't do it, while Joe Biden says behave differently. It's revealing just how impotent Joe Biden is to solve this problem. And in fact, there's a growing body of data out there that Americans themselves are tired of Joe Biden. We have more CNN polling. James Freeman of the Wall Street Journal highlights a key portion that has gone largely uncommented on, even as the polling suggests that Donald Trump continues to do very well in the polls, very well in the election. He has gone from being up 0.2 points to being up 1.2 percentage points in the Real Clear Politics polling average. He's up 6 points in CNN. Now, some very good pollsters have started to shift the race into Biden's favor. ABC Ipsos now has Biden up 1. Tip poll has Biden up 2. Morning Consult has Trump up 1. Morning Consult's an online poll. Don't really believe it. But what's notable is that there's been a shift towards Trump in that. The ABC News poll shows among the people most likely to vote, Joe Biden wins. But among people who say they'll vote, Donald Trump actually does well. They focus on registered voters, though, and it's got Biden up 1. That's still enough, given how Trump underperforms his polling, for Trump to win. My point here is not to discuss the polling per se, but a particular aspect of it. Let me read you this from James Freeman of the Wall Street Journal. Large media organizations have been telling Americans for nearly a decade about never Trump voters, and surely there are a lot of them, but perhaps some voters are not quite as numerous as the never Biden folks who receive very little attention. Among all voters, Biden remains at a bit of a disadvantage relative to Trump in terms of the share of voters who have ruled out voting for him. 52% of voters, according to CNN, say there is no chance they will vote for Joe Biden. Only 47% say there's no chance they would back Trump. While within the margin of error, this number is continuing to crop up in other pollsters' polling as well, which suggests, though the accuracy of it is dubious, the trend line is not, that a growing number of Americans are saying they will never, ever vote for Joe Biden, in large part because of the economy. And now you have this turmoil in the Middle East, and the Biden administration appears to be botching the negotiations as well. All of this going on in the confluence of the Stormy Daniels hearing, where more and more Americans are signaling they don't particularly care about it. And then you have this news from CNBC.
So inflation remains a sticky and top issue for our small business owners. According to our latest CNBC SurveyMonkey Small Business Confidence Index, only 1 in 4 now say that inflation has peaked. That's down from nearly a third last quarter. Meanwhile, 3/4 say they still expect inflation to continue to rise. That's also up from 69% last quarter. More than 1 in 3 said that inflation is their biggest threat to business right now. That is 3 times as many who say consumer demand, labor shortages, supply chain or interest rates are their top threats to business.
You know, that's really not good for Biden when most Americans, remember, work at a small business, not a large business. When a growing number of small businesses say that inflation has not peaked and that things are still bad, that changes their hiring decisions, it changes their operating decisions, it changes their spend decisions. That's not good. You have the situation in Israel, it's not good. You have the situation on college campuses, 68% of college students are opposed to the protests on campus. 90-some-odd% of college students say Jewish students should not be harassed on campus. But the Biden administration has decided they've got to placate the angry horde of anti-Semites on campus to win. By building this sort of coalition, the Biden administration believes they're piecing together a coalition of small bits and pieces of the country in order to win the election, and they may actually be losing the election because of it. And again, in the background of all of this is this trial in New York. I have CNN on because so many Americans outside of the right, they're going to watch and they're going to get their news from there, not Fox News. And they're breathlessly covering it. The cry out of the bottom, Stormy Daniels testifies about meeting Karen McDougal. The prosecution is grilling her. She's talking about Trump said she looked like her daughter. There is some creepiness. And everybody's losing sight of the underlying issue here. The underlying issue is not about Donald Trump fraudulently documenting business records, because the statute of limitations has passed on that. It's about a federal campaign finance violation, and the judge in the trial has decided to preclude a witness on that point, which again suggests the fix is in. And I think there's a case to be made to the American people that the fix is in on this. Because, and again, this is very important for people to understand here. The underlying case is premised on a federal campaign finance violation. If the judge is unwilling to allow testimony on that underlying federal campaign finance violation, you got a problem with the fix being in here. This is also in chaos for Joe Biden. This gets to my morning piece, my morning email. It's a point I've made a lot on the radio program, and I hadn't put it in writing. But I've just been thinking more and more about this, and it goes back to the clip I played you yesterday of Donald Trump before he went into trial, focused on the protests at Columbia, focused on the students being denied graduation, and focused on the Biden donors funding this stuff. He's become a more disciplined campaigner out of necessity, not because he wants to be, but out of necessity. Meanwhile, Joe Biden continues to get on stage and flubs at every opportunity. The brain freeze pauses even in his speech today on anti-Semitism and the like. This is a campaign season where the Democrats are beginning to tell everyone who will listen it's a winnable race. Notice they're not saying it's a winning race. This sets the tone moving forward for this race as we approach the summer. Here's the problem for the Democrats right now as we head into summer. We haven't seen the rest of the economic news. We know inflation has not come down. We know interest rates are not going to be cut. We know we're headed to financial calamity. We know the Israel situation in Gaza is going to get worse. We know the Democrats are placating the anti-Semites. We know the Donald Trump stuff is baked in. We don't know the economic surprises that could come. So you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. There's going to be increased bullying and hysteria from the left and the media about all of you and how you must vote for Donald or for Joe Biden because Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, which of course gets to the lieutenant governor of the state of Georgia and his op-ed suggesting he's going to vote for Biden and everyone else might. The media nationally has played this up big time. The problem here is we have the Biden administration wrecking the economy and redefining girls to include boys. There are a lot of Americans who look on him as an existential threat. And I think people who hate Trump miss that fact that as much as you may hate Trump and view him an existential threat to democracy, a lot of people view Joe Biden as an existential threat to their very own existence. And all the situations happening today just reinforce it. Hello, America. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, Stanley Druckenmiller is a prominent investor, billionaire. He's on with Squawk Box this morning on CNBC. Listen to some of this talking about the economy.
It's another, I think, issue of being, you know, things are going well, and then we totally overspent in terms of fiscally as well in Bidenomics.
Bidenomics, if I was a professor, I'd give them an F. Basically, they misdiagnosed COVID and thought it was we were going into a depression. The Fed did, too. I worried about it, too, in early days. The Fed eventually pivoted, better late than never. Treasury is still acting like we're in a depression. It's interesting because I studied the Great Depression, and you had a private sector crippled with debt with basically no new ideas. So interventionist policies were called for and were effective. The private sector could not be more different today than it was in the Great Depression. Their balance sheets are fine, they're healthy, and have you ever seen more innovative ideas that the private sector could take advantage of now? You've got blockchain, you've got AI, you've got the whole thing. All government needed to do was get out of their way and let them innovate. Instead, they've spent and spent and spent. And my new fear now is that spending and the resulting interest rates on the debt that's been created are going to crowd out some of the innovation that otherwise would have taken place. We've got to.
Yes, he's absolutely right. It's affecting regional banks as well, where you've got regional banks going wobbly right now on their credit. You've got lack of innovation there. Everybody's expecting the moral hazards to kick in. The government banking sector, Swiss America, wants to help you protect your hard-earned assets now. They've got a report, the Secret War on Cash, they want to give you completely for free. All you have to do is call or text my name, Eric Erickson, to 800-289-2646. The all-out war on cash includes digital forms of currency. It is the government and corporations trying to steer you to use credit that they can then monitor and control. You need to read about this completely for free from Swiss America. You call or text my name, Eric Erickson, 800-289-2646. That's 800-289-2646. The report is completely free, and Swiss America can educate you on how to protect your hard-earned assets right now. 800-289-2646. 800-289-2646. Just text my name, Eric Erickson, or call them. Give them my name. They'll send you their free report. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. Eric Hovde is the candidate for the GOP in Wisconsin. Tammy Baldwin for her third term up there. He's challenging her. He's a businessman. He's a banker. Has a great international charity as well. I'm going to talk to him later in the show. Right now, I want to talk about Jeff Duncan's op-ed, and he's done a media tour on this. You probably heard about it. Jeff Duncan was the lieutenant governor in the state of Georgia. He has penned an op-ed essentially saying everybody needs to vote for Joe Biden. He, Republican, doesn't like Donald Trump, saw the stop the steal nonsense in Georgia, decided people need to stand for Joe Biden. He was on CNN talking with John Berman and Scott Jennings. Here's part of it.
I'm only speaking to those Republicans that are conservative like me. I've got a historical voting record that is as conservative as anybody. I'm putting the piece that I've been a Republican my whole life, unlike Donald Trump. And I think we've got to take our medicine. And it's painful. It hurts. It sometimes maybe doesn't seem like it makes sense. But if we're going to heal, we've got to move past Donald Trump. He's taking us to the bottom of the ocean, and some of us don't even realize it.
Now, I get this a lot. And I will tell you, I appreciate Jeff Duncan's concerns with Donald Trump and the level of angriness that I think he has provoked in some people. But I really want you to listen to me right now. I want you to just follow along with me here. I think that Donald Trump's superpower, as I've always said, is to make the people who hate him behave like they think he does. But Donald Trump also inspires other people, his supporters, to just become belligerent, angry. I say this from experience. We had people show up at our house to threaten us when I said in 2016 I wouldn't support Trump. My kids were beat up and harassed and bullied. My daughter pushed to commit suicide by kids at school whose parents hated me so much because I didn't support Donald Trump that the kids decided, you know, maybe if my kid killed herself, I might see the light. I know this. But I also know something else. Joe Biden is at war with American decency as much as Donald Trump is. And a lot of the Republicans who say we have to go with Joe Biden because Donald Trump is some sort of threat to our decency and our values, you're asking a lot of Americans whose 401ks are hurt, whose economic circumstances have been degraded by Joe Biden, whose daughters' scholarships are threatened because of the boys and girls sports, you're asking them to put your democracy ahead of their well-being. And there are a lot of Americans who look at the situation of this country and they think the country's not working for me, therefore it's broken. And so I'm not going to go side with a guy who's broken the country because the broken country doesn't work for me and Donald Trump will. You're asking Americans, when you say we got to go vote for Joe Biden, where conservatives look at what Donald Trump has done to us, you're asking them to put an ideal ahead of their reality in many cases. I do think a lot of Americans are not going to vote in November. I hear from a lot of voters who are disaffected with both sides, who don't like either side, who despise Joe Biden but despise Donald Trump, and telling them they need to go vote for the guy they hate because you hate the other guy and they should too really isn't a sales pitch. Boeing. You know, two whistleblowers are now dead. One, you can say, and you know, my theory with the first guy who died in his truck of gunshot wound was, if I was really furious with Boeing, here's what I would do. I would tell everybody, hey, if something happens to me, it wasn't me. I'm fine. I'm good. I clearly wouldn't commit suicide. And then you go eat a bullet. And so everyone would go after the company that you've hated, despised, and were fighting in a lawsuit. And then the second guy dies. Now, the second guy dies of health reasons. He gets some sort of infection of some kind of dies, but it starts to look suspicious. But what we know, regardless of what the whistleblowers did or did not do, whether or not they died innocently or were murdered, we know that Boeing forged and falsified documents to get its planes in the air. We know that Blackstone, not BlackRock, Blackstone has been buying up American houses and turning Americans into renters and depriving them of the American dream, and housing scarcity is so bad in part because a lot of available homes were bought up by these private equity companies. I read the story the other day of some private equity company that was buying life insurance on random people betting against them, hoping to cash in on life insurance policies. It reminds me of the scene in Jurassic Park where Jeffrey Goldblum's character says, "You were so busy asking if you could do something, you didn't ask if you should do something." What does all of this have to do with Biden and Trump, the corruption of capitalism? Here's the problem. A capitalism ungrounded from morality is no better than communism. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And everybody's end goal is not to make a compelling product or service in which to get rich, but just to make money. And what happens is people unmoored from a morality in capitalism and see a capitalism that's making money for the sake of making money and depriving people of well-being, those people aren't moving to socialism. Those people are moving to a technocracy, and the technocrats make the decisions. And we are arriving at that point in this country where the technocrats are dictating how we live our lives. The technocrats are dictating it. And the problem is that the technocrats hate people who don't have college degrees and live on the coast and have bought into all the global warming hysteria. And they're progressives. And their values are progressive. And they run the Biden administration. And because they run the Biden administration, they increasingly run an economy where people are giving up on the capitalists because the capitalists are behaving like greedy a-holes, just like the communists do. So when you come out and you tell people to save our country, to save our movement, to save our ideals, you got to vote for Joe Biden. You're not meeting people where they're at. Where people are at is they're worried about their children. They're worried about the technocrats who have embraced the transgender agenda, which is anti-science, anti-biology, and anti-family, and embraced by the Biden administration and advanced by the Biden administration. They're worried about their kids' education, where the progressives wanted to close schools. They've been fighting school choice. The Biden administration ruthlessly opposed to school choice. In the states that have passed school choice, the Biden administration tried to pass regulations through the Department of Education that would crack down on it. There's inflation, there's the economy, there's education, there are cultural values. The elite and the technocrats who are increasingly running this country because capitalism has given up on actually having a standard other than making money. Forget the goods and services that we should be making to make money. Let's just make money for the sake of making money. Everything else be damned. You've got a lot of people out there who are burnt out on the system who do not think it's working for them. And when you tell them you've got to continue to vote for the people who prop up that system that is out to get them, you're not giving them a way out of this. I understand people who don't like Donald Trump, not a fan myself. But to tell those people you've got to side with a party that is hostile to your values, hostile to your family, hostile to your job, hostile to your way of life, hostile to your freaking dishwasher. You've kind of lost the plot in my mind. It's one thing to tell people, you know, the only way we're going to change this is to stay home, and part of the stewardship of your vote is just don't vote or skip that race. Go vote and skip that race so that the parties, the Democrats and Republicans who foist on us bad nominees, see that you're so many people are opting out. The way to win is to offer a better candidate. That there's a stewardship angle there. But for a lot of Americans, they're not going to opt out. They're not going to sit on the sidelines. They're not going to say, "I want my voice to be heard, therefore I'm not voting because I want them to see me on the sidelines refusing to vote." No, what a lot of Americans are going to do is they're going to go vote for Donald Trump because they see this administration as hostile to their way of life. They see them as hostile to their dishwasher and to their refrigerator and to their washer and dryer and water heater and car. They see them as hostile to their schools. They see them as hostile to their kids. They see them as hostile to their values. And telling people you got to go support our democracy, so you got to go vote for Joe Biden, really doesn't do jack for people who see this administration at war with their way of life. I get the inclination to be opposed to Trump. I get the inclination to want to sit home. But to tell a Christian, to tell a person of faith, you need to go vote for the godless guy on that side because the godless guy on this side is a sinner. Well, if there's godlessness on both sides, you're going to wonder, on which side are they going to at least protect my family? To tell the Jewish person, you got to go vote for Joe Biden, who is making kissy face with Hamas and anti-Semites, it's a bridge too far for a lot of people, I think. Our systems are failing us. Our institutions are failing us. The media is not out to serve integrity and tell us the truth. They're out to advance a left-wing narrative. Major corporations in this country, they've been picked as the winners by the government, and so they're there to prop up the government. They're not there to really innovate. They're not really there to provide jobs for people. They're there to make money. They're there to cash in, to get out while the getting out is good before China reigns supreme. So the technocrats who hate everyone, they're in charge. They're making decisions. They're guiding the economy, and they hate the middle class. They hate flyover country. If you're between the Rockies and the Appalachian Mountains, will God have mercy on your soul? Because the government will not. All I'm asking is you at least try to understand that the people who are voting for Donald Trump are not bad people, and they're tired of being treated like the enemy by Washington and New York. They're tired of being treated like the enemy by the newsmakers. They're tired of being treated like the enemy by the cultural trendsetters in Hollywood who make the movies, who make the redneck preacher from the South the bad guy. If you can't understand why people are voting for Donald Trump, you're not going to be able to solve the problems. And to tell people, to tell conservatives, you've got to vote for a person who is hostile to your values, I think that's a bridge too far. I think it's easier to just tell people, don't go vote, and your voice will be heard by not voting. And by not voting, the parties will realize they got to do better. Like Bush in 2000 realized the evangelicals who sat it out could have won the race handily, and so they made changes institutionally and philosophically within the Bush administration to advance an agenda that evangelicals would like. And guess what? The evangelicals turned out in 2004 big time and gave Bush the majority vote. Our capitalist system has forgotten the plot. The plot is not to make money for the sake of making money, but to make a good or a product that other people find beneficial in an arm's length transaction, and there you make your money. The technocrats have forgotten the plot. We are a government of the people, for the people, and by the people, not of the bureaucrats, for the bureaucrats, and by the bureaucrats. And I think our politicians have forgotten the plot. People are not voting to save democracy. They're voting to save their family. And if you can't reach them at that level, well, you're not going to reach them. You know who is? A guy named Donald Trump. Americans for Prosperity wants to remind you prosperity is possible. They around the country are educating Americans and reminding them that traditional conservative economic policy grows the country. Bidenomics has been bad. Prosperity is good, and free market economics is the way to bring about prosperity. It's elevated billions of people out of poverty. And Americans for Prosperity, they're doing a bus tour around the country, and they want you to show up for it. You can go to prosperityispossible.com and find out where they're going to be. And you can hear from speakers who remind you we know how to fix the economy. We already have the ideas in place. We don't need newfangled ideas. We have the ideas in place that we need. You can go hang out on the bus tour. You can hear these great speakers, and you can get involved in reminding people that prosperity is possible. And all you have to do is go to prosperityispossible.com. Prosperityispossible.com is the website to remember, remind you, we don't need new shiny ideas. The tried and the true, they work. Prosperityispossible.com is brought to you by Americans for Prosperity around the country. They're a do tank, not a think tank, doing the work of the conservative movement to remind people prosperity is possible. Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, I would be happy to have you. Now, I gotta just either this Peggy News. So I don't keep up with the Met. I assume y'all are normal people. And normal people who aren't highly online, you don't keep up with the Met nonsense. But Peggy Noonan has this piece in the Wall Street Journal. I wish to protest the current ugliness. I see it as a continuing trend, the uglification of everything. You remember the 1999 movie, The Talented Mr. Ripley, from the Patricia Highsmith novel? It was fabulous. Mysteries, murders, a sociopath scheming his way among high-class expats on the Italian Riviera, the laid-back glamour of Jude Law, the Grace Kelly-ness of Gwyneth Paltrow, who looks like a Vogue magazine cover dedicated to take a stroll through the streets of Venice, the truly brilliant actor Matt Damon, who is so well-liked by audiences, I'm not sure we notice anymore what a great actor he is. There's a new version called Ripley on Netflix. I turned to it eagerly and watched with puzzlement. It's an unrelievedly ugly, grimy, gloomy, grim Tom Ripley's now charmless, pale, watchful slug slithering through ancient rooms. He's not bright. On and on it goes. And, you know, it's not the same. The number of people who just, I mean, the ugly outfits that are considered fashion, and frankly, the elevation of really morbidly obese people and telling us that they're beautiful and who's to judge. I'm with Peggy Noonan on this. It's kind of garbage. At the end of this column, why does it all bother me? Because even though it's not new, uglification is rising and spreading as an artistic attitude, and it can't be good for us because it speaks of self-hatred in a society that hates itself and hates life, and it won't last because it gives those who are young nothing to live and feel soft about because we need beauty to keep up our morale. I agree with that. You know, it's not a coincidence that the further art moved away through the Enlightenment and the Renaissance period towards modernity, it started putting toilet bowls on the wall saying this is art. It's not art. It doesn't edify. It doesn't glorify. It doesn't do anything. It's just garbage. There's something wrong with Western society. It has lost its sense of pride in itself, and it is the ultimate conquest from the academy to make us feel bad about Western society, and it plays out in the colleges as well as we see people protesting. When we come back, Eric Hovde from Wisconsin is going to join me. This is our other program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. If you're buying a building, buying a franchise, you need $250,000 or more, First Liberty might be able to help you. Go to FirstLibertyGA.com. FirstLibertyGA.com. They make their own lending decisions. They have been since the 1990s. They want to help your business grow. If they can, tell them I sent you. The Frost family are fantastic people who love to help businesses grow. FirstLibertyGA.com. FirstLibertyGA.com. We'll be back with Eric Hovde from Wisconsin.